I had moved in mid-year, my third grade year, from South Bend, and it was just awfully hard. It always is to fit in, to be new in the middle of the year. And it took me until spring to realize that my only hope of fitting in with boys was to play baseball, and I had never played. My dad had never played. I was an only child. There was just nobody to teach me. And I was still unpopular enough, new enough, that you risked social capital to be seen with me, teaching me to play ball. So I was really at sea.
Why were your parents so reluctant or took so long to tell you that you had a relative who was a pitcher for the Yankees?
Yeah, it happened on the way back from church one day. I was just complaining about how hard it was to learn to play baseball. And my mom said, "Why don't you ask your cousin about it?" And I said, "What do you mean?" And she said, "I had a cousin named Don Larson who played for the Yankees." And I looked it up in a baseball encyclopedia. And sure enough, there was a person who matched my family name, the Larson with an E, from Michigan City, who indeed was a pitcher for the Yankees. I just don't think it ever came up. There was no need for it to come up. Their family, the Larson family, had moved to California a few years before, so I never really saw those people, although I had always heard of them. When it happened, it became a lifeline, the idea that I had a Major League Baseball player as a cousin, and I wrote to him right away, wrote him a postcard asking for help. He wrote back, not with instruction, but with encouragement, and later in the year sent me an autographed ball signed by all the Yankees, and later in the year sent me a hat, one of his hats with sweat, around the inside of the band, and later still sent us tickets to Comiskey Park in your neck of the woods to see a ball game between the Yankees and the Chicago White Sox, and as luck would have it, the game was rained out, so we spent the entire day in the lobby of the Del Prado Hotel, now raised in Chicago, where I just met the Yankees, just spent the day with the New York Yankees. It was just fabulous.
Yeah, your baseball skills needed a lot of honing, and you emulated the Mickey Mantle batting stance and the pitching motion of Larson and probably some other pitchers. And did that help you eventually?
I would say that it didn't, really. I did emulate Mantle's batting stance. I had an instruction manual that he supposedly wrote for Lifebuoy Soap entitled How I Hit. He said that he kept his feet 15 inches apart and had some other tips. And I got to the point where I could mimic it perfectly in front of a mirror. But when an actual pitch came, it was just looked like a little seed. I was very nearsighted, had thick glasses, and it just terrified me. I put my foot in the bucket, as it was called, then stepped away from the pitch. I was just so frightened. And I didn't hit the ball, didn't make contact with the ball until the middle of my Little League season. I played Little League that summer and finally grounded into a double play, a two-hopper to shortstop. And as for pitching, I didn't really mimic Larson as much as I mimicked Whitey Ford. When I met him in Chicago, he told me not to try to throw a curve because my arm wasn't ready. And I became obsessed with learning how to throw a curve. Information was hard to find, and I finally stumbled onto an article in Baseball Digest to which I subscribed entitled Seven Pitchers Share Their Curveball Secrets. And, Sal Magley and Bob Porterfield and so forth all talk about how to throw a curve, and I amazingly got a chance to pitch in a Little League game, and I threw about five pitches, but the first two were curveballs where I hit batters, and the last pitch of the season for me was a ball that whizzed between the dugout and the backstop, I remember.
Now let's talk about, you mentioned Baseball Digest. What baseball in that era did, not just looking at all the statistics, but listening to late-night broadcasts, it was a world that you immersed yourself in and helped you forget about some of the things going on around you.
Yeah, I was having a tough time at school. I was just really having a hard time fitting in, but when I found out that I had a cousin on the Yankees, I just lived a fantasy life through the Yankees. I just imagined these locker room scenes in which Mantle cared about me and asked Larson about my welfare and how my season was going, and had lots of locker room scenes which I remembered in the book Perfect Once Removed. But it was a different world back then. It's hard to describe to somebody. There were only four television channels, just the network. So there was one televised game of the week on NBC on Saturday. if you grew up in the Midwest, you had the luxury of all these 50,000-watt clear-channel radio stations sprouting out of the prairies and sending these great games with just wonderful announcers back and forth across the flatland. You know, one of the best stations was KMOX in St. Louis, and the voices were Harry Carey and Jack Buck giving you, you know, the Stan Musial Cardinals. And then there was Bob Elston in Chicago and Wade Hoyt in Cincinnati. And my parents made the mistake of giving me a transistor radio for Christmas, and it had an earplug. And I hid the earplug under my pillow, and after I'd say goodnight to them, I'd pull the earplug out from beneath the mattress and jam it in my ear. And if I had it in my ear, they couldn't hear the broadcast. And I often fell asleep with that earplug in my ear.
There was a day in school where you'd thought you'd gotten into a lot of trouble and anticipated being hit by this paddle at the hand of the principal, and then he had this baseball conversation with you.
Yeah, he was a great guy. My principal in grade school was named Lincoln C. Northcott, and everybody was terrified of him because he was a fierce-looking guy, bulldog jowls and a mouthful of silver fillings, and he just looked like a tough guy, and everyone, my schoolmates, believed that he kept an electric paddle plugged into a socket in his wall by his desk. And I got in trouble one day. My teacher dragged me down, and Mr. Northcott said, "You can go back to class, Mrs. Perrigo. I'll take care of him." And I was just terrified, and my eyes were darting around the office looking for the paddle, but I couldn't see it in the sockets anywhere. And he didn't say anything for a long time. He just looked out the window, and finally he said, "Do you play chess?" And he was just the greatest guy. He knew that Larson was my cousin. He knew Larson pitched for the Yankees, and we just lapsed into this long baseball conversation. And he just became a great friend to me.
Do you think baseball strengthened or somehow changed your relationship with your parents once you were interested and wanted to look like you knew what you were doing in Little League?
You know, my dad played catch with me in the backyard. He wasn't very good at it. He didn't have any experience with it. He often played with a pipe in his mouth. He was an engineer, and he was sort of a spacey guy, so who knows what was on his mind. But the fact that he did it mattered, you know. I did appreciate that. And the fact that my dad wrote to Don or called him and asked for tickets, I'm sure that's how it happened, to the White Sox-Yankee game in Chicago, I very much appreciated that. And when the World Series came up and the Yankees played the Dodgers in 1956, you know, when I was nine, my mom tried to talk the school into letting me stay home to watch some of those games, especially the ones that Don pitched in, but she couldn't budge them. As good a guy as Mr. Northcott was, he wasn't willing to have the students and teachers watch the games. In 1956, baseball was really all there was. There was no Super Bowl, and you know the NFL and the NBA were really infant leagues. Baseball was really everything, and it seems strange, but all the games were played in the afternoon. The one thing they would give my mom and me was the permission to go home at noon. So my mother and I worked out a strategy to see the optimal number of minutes from an hour, and it turned out to be 43. We timed the whole thing out that if I ran out of school at the noon bell, I could get to 16th Street, cross 16th Street. My mom would have my bike waiting for me on the south side of 16th Street. Since she didn't drive, she couldn't pick me up, and had the handlebars pointed toward home, and I'd vault onto the bike and churn up to my house, race inside, the TV would be on, and there would be lunch on a TV tray in front of the TV set that my mom had done for me.
Talk about that day, the day that Don Larson pitched his perfect game. I'm thinking perhaps what ended up happening in the classroom may have even been more emotionally gratifying than what would have happened had you been allowed to stay home and watch the game with your mom.
Well, it was a more dramatic story, that's for sure. The fifth game was in Yankee Stadium, and it was really the pivotal game of the series, because if the Yankees had not won that game, they would have been down 3-2 and headed to Brooklyn for the final two games, and probably they would have lost the series. So it was a big game. I ran to my house, ran and rode to my house, pulled up to the TV tray, and there to my astonishment was my cousin pitching. He had pitched the second game also and not done very well, and so nobody expected to see him again in the series. But Casey Stengel, the Yankee manager, had confidence in him in big games. By the time I got there, it was deep into the first inning, and it was a nothing-nothing game. And he was pitching beautifully. I mean, just nobody was doing anything against him or against Sal Magley, the Dodger pitcher. And the game just whizzed by, and we were in the fourth inning when my mother's voice said, "Time to go back, honey." And I just couldn't believe it. It was like being pulled from a dream. And I argued, "Come on, Mom, Don's pitching, and he's doing well, and it's too close, you know." And she almost wavered, but she didn't. And she made me go back. She said, "Everybody knows where you are. Everybody knows you're not sick. Go on back." So I got on my bike and headed back to school, just worried sick, you know, about this game. And the door opened to my classroom a little bit after 2, and Mr. Northcott, the principal, walked in and walked in front of the class, and he said, "It's about the World Series, what I have to say. The Yankees won," and there were, you know, mixture of boos and cheers, and then he said, "But it's about Phil's cousin. He's pitched the first perfect game in the history of the World Series." And then he went on to explain what a perfect game was, and kids just got up and ran to me and started pounding me on the back, you know, as if I had done it myself. And, you know, it really did have quite an effect on me for, on into the spring, because Don's game had coattails. It gave me a little popularity bump. I had a spike there, and kids would not only be willing to be seen with me, but some of the boys began to teach me how to play, uncrossed my hands on the bat and pitched to me and so forth. And, you know, I got better.
You didn't stay in touch with your cousin for a good stretch, but caught up last year.
Yeah, I saw him a few times more until I was in my mid-teens, mainly because he continued to pitch. We'd go see him in Cincinnati, or one time we actually saw him in Indianapolis, which is right next to Speedway, because he got sent down to the minors. But I went for about 40 years without seeing him at all, and then when I decided to write this book, I went out to see him in Idaho. He lives in northern Idaho, and he was very gracious and welcoming about, you know, agreeing to let me visit. But, you know, what I really wanted to know didn't have anything to do with baseball. It was about my family. I wondered whether he felt the same kinds of connections and links to as a part of my extended family, you know, as I did. This guy had been part of my mythic landscape for decades, and I just wondered if he really felt any connection to me or felt any connection to the people I knew and loved, especially when I was a kid. So, you know, when I got out there, we talked about baseball for a while, but in a way it was almost like a nervous habit. And then I pulled out a photograph of our extended family, the second generation of Norwegian immigrants that came. I think the picture was from 1915. And, you know, just two rows of unsmiling people, seated against a flower print wall with the parents seated in front. And Don just bent over the picture, and he pointed out one. He said, "That's Kay, isn't it?" You know, and you know, we were sort of off to the races because he had a lot of stories about my Uncle Kay, somebody that I knew really well. And then there were other people that we had in common and so forth. And it really turned out to be a really nice visit. We had a couple days together. He's a great guy, Don Larson is.